Welcome to the Buddha Sasana Podcast. This talk was given by Bhikkhu Chintita in Austin, Texas.
Today I want to start talking about purity of mind. In the Dhammapada, the Buddha tells us, "Well-makers direct the water, fletchers bend the arrow, carpenters bend a piece of wood. Good people fashion themselves." Our actions for harm or benefit arise first in the mind as thoughts with certain intentionality behind them. For most of us, as we attempt to refrain from evil and accomplish good, the mind is often contrary and unsupportive, agitated and rebellious, intent on another generally selfish agenda. As a result, following the precepts and practicing generosity is often a struggle. Occasionally, however, we may experience the enormous joy when mind and body come into full alignment and our most virtuous intentions flow effortlessly into actions harmless and beneficial. This is a moment of purity of mind. There are those noble ones among us who experience life like this all of the time. The mind for them has become an instrument of virtue, of kindness and of compassion, of wisdom and of strength. They have become adepts in virtue through the practice of purifying the mind, and so walk the earth with unbounded goodwill, equanimity, and wisdom, selfless, beyond delusional views, with clarity about what is of harm and what of benefit. They are, by the karmic way, also the happiest and most fulfilled among us. Purifying the mind begins with the practices of refraining from evil and practicing good, but also to a significant degree it takes on a life of its own and in the end floods the practices of refraining from evil and practicing good with pure intentions. Wholesome and unwholesome thoughts. The basic principle of purifying the mind is expressed in the first two verses of the Dhammapada as follows. Mind precedes all phenomena. Mind is their chief. They are all mind-made. If, with an impure mind, a person speaks or acts, suffering follows him like the wheel that follows the foot of an ox. Mind precedes all phenomena. Mind is their chief. They are all mind-made. If, with a pure mind, a person speaks or acts, happiness follows him like his never-departing shadow. The practice of purifying the mind belongs to what is called in Western philosophy virtue ethics. Ethics as a quality of character, rather than as consequences in the world. Its motivating principle is renunciation, the putting aside of concern for personal advantage. Purifying the mind places the emphasis of ethics on the development of the kind of mind that naturally seeks benefit and shuns harm. Training the mind toward virtue might at first seem like a hopeless task. Most of us have a lot of endless activity rattling and buzzing around between our ears, and it's not clear how it might be brought into any reasonable order, much less under control. Hubba hubba, that jerk. Out of my way, it's his own fault. Oh boy, beer. Aha, there now. Let me get you a paper towel. If I slide my sunglasses up my forehead, it'll look really cool. Good morning,
relax.
God.
Arrgh.
Tomorrow
yawn.
Is another day.
What the, huh?
Let's be logical about
I'm
this.
I'm gonna get even.
Mine, all mine.
Good
God, morning. No more
yikes.
Mr. Nice
Yakety
guy.
Yakety yak.
How do we sort through this, much less point it in the general direction of virtue? Exactly what is a pure thought as opposed to a corrupted thought anyway? Can we actually get rid of one and keep the other so that happiness will follow like a shadow instead of pain like a wheel? The Buddha reports that he had begun with some questions early on. Bhikkhus, before my awakening, while I was still only an unawakened bodhisattva, it occurred to me, suppose that I divide my thoughts into two classes. Then I set on one side thoughts of sensual desire, thoughts of ill will, and thoughts of cruelty, and I set on the other side thoughts of renunciation, thoughts of kindness, and thoughts of non-harming. Notice that the thoughts on the second side, renunciation, kindness, and non-harming, are the motivating principles for purity, generosity, and harmlessness, respectively. The Buddha called the first class of thoughts unwholesome or unskillful, akusala, and the second class wholesome or skillful, kusala. Both wholesome and skillful are common translations of the Pali kusala and should be understood as synonyms, as should their negative counterparts. Wholesome thoughts have the intentional quality of meritorious deeds. Unwholesome thoughts have the intentional quality of demeritorious deeds. Wholesome, kusala, and meritorious, punya, or unwholesome or demeritorious, are interchangeable in most contexts, except that wholesome is more generally used for a mental intention and meritorious for a wholesome physical or verbal action that the intention gives rise to. It's significant that the Buddha chose terminology suggestive of skill, which, like tennis or crossword puzzles, is something we get better at with practice, rather than a moral judgment. For instance, among the thoughts identified as unskillful are restlessness, agitation, conceit, jealousy, guilt, pride, cynicism, greed, miserliness, thoughts of revenge, spite, envy, grumpiness, ill will, anger, hate, rage, sorrow, fear, bias, delusion, stubbornness, narrow-mindedness, torpor, complacency, affection, and lust. Among those identified as skillful are generosity, renunciation, kindness, compassion, patience, intelligence, discernment, shame, rectitude, mindfulness, concentration, equanimity, pliancy, buoyancy, conviction, open-mindedness, composure, proficiency, and gladness for the good fortune of others. Greed, hatred, and delusion. What criteria did the Buddha employ to create this dichotomy? Unless we understand this, we will never thoroughly understand the role of skill and non-skill in our own mind. We will continue to be driven by forces we do not understand. We will cause great harm, and we will never find satisfaction in our life. The Buddha discovered that several criteria coincide remarkably in the designation skillful and unskillful. There are these three roots of what is unskillful. Which three? Greed as a root of what is unskillful. Hatred as a root of what is unskillful. Delusion as a root of what is unskillful. These are the three roots of what is unskillful. The roots of the skillful are the opposites of the unskillful: non-greed,
non-hatred and non-delusion, also known as renunciation, kindness, and wisdom. Greed, lobha, is the desire, longing, attachment, or lust for sensual pleasures, for reputation or fame, for wealth, for power, for comfort, for security, and so on. I would prefer to translate lobha as the more general neediness, but greed has become standard in English. Greed causes anxiety and restlessness, initially from not having what we desire, then later, if we've acquired what we desire, from knowing we will lose it, or from simply wanting more. Hatred, dosa, is the aversion, dislike, dread, or fear of pain, of comfort, of enemies, and so on. It includes thoughts of anger, revenge, envy, or jealousy. These last two also have an element of greed. Resentment, guilt, self-hate, disdain, judgmental attitudes, and so on. Aversion is probably a better translation for dosa, though hate or hatred has become standard. Hatred immediately manifests as anxiety and restlessness, in short, suffering, because it entails dissatisfaction with the world as it is. Typically, it arises when our desires are thwarted or threatened, and in this way is intimately bound to greed. Both are forms of craving, greed for the presence of something, hatred for its absence. Delusion, moha, is found in erroneous views or justifications, misperceptions, ignorance, and denial. Many of our delusions may be widely held beliefs in a given society or even across cultures. For instance, that material abundance produces happiness, that unconditionally evil people walk among us, or that one race or class is the master of others. These leads to endemically misguided decisions and actions. Others are often pervasive across cultures, manifesting particularly in the sense that certain things are unchanging, fixed, or reliable, and that there is fun, happiness, and beauty where, in fact, there is decay and suffering. The greatest delusion for the early Buddhist is that there is an abiding self, a me, that in some way remains fixed in spite of all the changes that happen around it, that is also the owner and controller of this body and this mind. For the Buddha, delusion is the most dangerous of the three unwholesome roots. But there is a taint worse than all taints. Delusion is the greatest taint. Bhikkhus, throw off that taint and become taintless. The root of delusion is also the basis of the other two roots. In fact, the delusional sense of self is the ultimate source of all that ails us and the basis of our resistance to ethical conduct. Greed and hatred have their basis in the sense of self, which tends to take things personally in a self-centered way. The relation of delusion to greed and hatred is also reciprocal. The Buddha observed, "Greed, hatred, and delusion, friend, make one blind, unseeing, and ignorant. They destroy wisdom, are bound up with distress, and do not lead to nibbana." Here we see that the arising of any of these is tied up with misperception, that is, they distort reality, thus producing delusion for those under their influence. They also cause personal suffering. Suffering, dukkha, is a key concept in Buddhism. The Pali word has also been translated into English as stress or dissatisfaction, and in any case ranges from the slightest feeling that something is out of kilter to the worst mental or physical anguish. Suffering is the standard translation for the Pali dukkha. The second of the Four Noble Truths, that craving is the origin of suffering, should also be mentioned here, since greed is a kind of craving for the presence of something and hatred for its absence. Let's take anger, one of the great fountainheads of karmic intentions, as an example of the dangers of greed, hatred, and delusion. Perceive through angry eyes the object of our anger, even a close friend or family member easily appears as a jerk or a schmuck, if not a demon, that, when anger subsides, will remorph back into its normal, more amiable form. The level of dukkha associated with the arising of even slight anger is astonishing when mindfully observed. And great anger plunges us into a hell-like state right here and now. We are all aware that habitual or sustained anger can even affect our physical health, high blood pressure, heart disease, and so on, in a profound way. Moreover, should anger become more ingrained through habituation, it'll become increasingly difficult to bring the mind into states of calm and insight. The Buddha also discovered that unwholesome or unskillful thought leads to my own affliction, to others' affliction, and to the affliction of both. It obstructs wisdom, causes difficulties, and leads away from Nibbana. This reiterates the suffering, misperception of reality, and crippling of progress on the Buddhist path associated with the unwholesome, and adds to it the inflicting of harm on others. Harm naturally results when greed, hatred, or delusion forms the volitional basis of our karmic acts. Consider how often violence or dangerous behavior, such as reckless driving, arises from anger, or how our anger leads to fear in others. On the other hand, skillful thoughts bring proportionate success to the practices of refraining from all evil and accomplishing good. There are two reasons why greed, hatred, and delusion lead to harm for others. First, we misperceive reality under the influence of greed or hatred. Our actions are like driving with a frosty windshield. We may vaguely make out our ignoble goals through the icy film, but we don't know whom we might be running over as we head toward those goals. As we've seen, it's difficult enough to track consequences of actions beyond a certain horizon, even when we see the present reasonably clearly. Second, the self-centered basis of greed, hatred, and delusion potentially makes us willing to sacrifice the well-being of others in favor of the perceived well-being of ourselves. These unskillful thoughts tend to stand in constant opposition to our practice of generosity and harmlessness. We can summarize the Buddha's observations that I've just discussed in terms of the following handy checklist. Unwholesome or unskillful thoughts. 1. They are grounded in either greed, in hatred, or in delusion. 2. When they give rise to actions, these actions generally cause harm to self or others. 3. They give rise to misperception. 4. They cause personal suffering. 5. They retard development on the path to Nibbana. These are the qualities of unwholesome or unskillful thoughts. Wholesome or skillful thoughts lack these qualities. The fruits of karma. Notice that the last two characteristics of the unwholesome, that is, suffering and retarded development, lend support to the familiar saying, virtue is its own reward. As long as we act with unskillful intentions, we suffer. Moreover, since we also fail to make progress and in fact regress on the path, we sacrifice the future well-being enjoyed by those of advanced spiritual attainment. For when we repeatedly weaken habit patterns that trigger skillful thoughts and strengthen habit patterns that trigger unskillful thoughts, we ensure greater suffering in the future as well. The Buddha describes this process of strengthening habit patterns. Whatever a monk keeps pursuing with his thinking and pondering, that becomes the inclination of his awareness. If a monk keeps pursuing thinking imbued with sensuality, abandoning thinking imbued with renunciation, his mind is bent by that thinking imbued with sensuality. If a monk keeps pursuing thinking imbued with ill will, abandoning thinking imbued with non-ill will, his mind is bent by that thinking imbued by ill will. If a monk keeps pursuing thinking imbued with harmfulness, abandoning thinking imbued with harmlessness, his mind is bent by that thinking imbued with harmfulness. By the way, the listener should never feel excluded from Buddha's instructions specifically addressed to monks for lack of robes nor head of hair. This usage simply reflects the circumstance that most of the time his audience was monastic. Certainly nuns would also have been included on many of these occasions. He said himself that he did not teach with a closed fist, that is, he had no esoteric teachings reserved for the few. In short, when we act with unskillful intentions, we suffer twice. First, immediately, and secondly, through the replaying of habit patterns that thereby accrue. The Buddha's psychological observations are in accord with what is said last week about the fruits of karma. I will be the heir of whatever deeds, good or bad, that I do. Recall that while we make the world through our actions, we also make ourselves. While we perform virtuous actions, we become virtuous people. While we perform beastly actions, we become cads. We therefore expect merit-making or good karma to adhere to the intentions, wholesome or unwholesome mental actions, behind our actions, more directly than to the particular physical actions themselves. Purity of mind in this way deepens as we practice generosity and harmlessness with pure intentions, and as a result we suffer less and make progress in our practice on the way toward Nibbana. An act of generosity or harmlessness is an act of body or of speech. The Buddha tells us, there are three kinds of volitional actions of karma, those of body, those of speech, and those of mind. In the first two, our intentions are acted out externally in the world. An act of mind, on the other hand, in itself lacks bodily or verbal expression, yet still has intention behind it. For instance, we can harbor ill will or kindness through thought alone. Acts of mind are important in our practice because they can be used to cultivate purity directly and efficiently, independently of bodily action or speech. Mindfulness and concentration practices while sitting on a cushion are primary examples. Indeed, these mental exercises have ethical value even while producing no direct harm or benefit to others, because they result in greater purity of mind as a growing inclination toward wholesome intentions, and that greater purity eventually produces benefit and reduces harm. Cultivating the mind in this way is something like tuning a running engine without actually shifting into gear. The car does not move during the tune-up, but it will drive much more smoothly after the tune-up.